from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. The banking industry finds itself on the receiving end of consumer unhappiness these days, from the new fees some banks are charging to use debit cards, to anger about home foreclosures, to protests on Wall Street. In the hour ahead, we'll explore what people are unhappy about and whether that anger is justified. Is charging a monthly fee for debit card use justifiable? What are the banking alternatives for unhappy consumers? Who should consider using online banks or credit unions? Consumers, cards, cash, and the banks. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome to Forum.
Bank of America customers, vote with your feet. Get the heck out of that bank. Find yourself a bank or credit union that won't gouge you for $5 a month and still will give you a debit card that you can use every single day.
That's Illinois Senator Dick Durbin talking about Bank America's decision to charge consumers $5 a month when they use their debit cards for purchases. Bank of America isn't the only bank taking that approach. Wells Fargo plans to test a similar approach in several states. This morning on Forum, we want to assess the fairness of charging for debit card use. Is Dick Durbin right, or are those fees justified? And what about the growing anger that people feel over banks for a variety of things, including their role in home foreclosures? Is that a reason for consumers to both fight and switch? How consumers can best meet their banking needs. That's our topic this morning in our first hour of Forum. Joining us, David Lazarus. He's business columnist for the Los Angeles Times. David, good morning.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Happy to have you join us. Jim Wilcox joins us as well. He is a professor in the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley. Also served as a senior economist for the Council of Economic Advisors between 1990 and 1992. Jim Wilcox, thanks for being with us as well.
Thanks for your interest.
And John Berlau joins us, too. He's director of the Center for Investors and Entrepreneurs at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Mr. Berlau, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
So, David Lazarus, start us out with giving us a little bit of credit card, debit card 101, because this comes out of something that I'm not sure is commonly understood, which is that banks can charge retailers every time a consumer uses a debit card for a purchase. How did that used to work? How does it work now? And how did that prompt what the Bank of America is doing?
Can and will charge. These are known as interchange fees. And that sounds a little technical, but in reality, what we're talking about here is the charge that banks levy every time a debit card has to be processed. And retailers pay it. And in theory, they are passing those costs along to us, the consumers, in higher retail prices. That's how all that works. Now, the problem here is retailers have been, well, just griping and moaning for a long time now that these interchange fees are far higher than the actual costs borne by the banks to process these transactions. How high were they? Well, according to the Federal Reserve, they were running an average of 44 cents per transaction as of last year. Now, that means with the millions, if not billions, of transactions going through, that's a huge revenue stream for the banks. So the Federal Reserve took a look at this thing with the prodding of lawmakers and determined that that was not a fair or proportional fee to be charged. That's the really important thing here, this question of is it reasonable, is it proportional? Now, the Federal Reserve determined that the actual cost to banks to process a debit card transaction when you take in the huge economies of scale is closer to 4 cents per transaction. So that means at 44 cents on average, that's a 1,000% profit margin. Now, the Fed listened to the banks when they said, oh, but we have all these other ancillary costs like overdraft protection and fraud protection and things like that. So the Fed said, okay, let's cap these transactions at about half what they were, at 21 cents per transaction. Now, that still means a 500% profit margin. And yet the banks still say we're going to be losing oodles of money. In Bank of America's case, they say they're going to lose about $2 billion as a result of this. The problem is that money, by the Fed's reckoning, is completely unreasonable. The other problem here is B of A and other bank shareholders have gotten used to these quote unquote, unreasonable revenues. And as a result of that, the bank needs to find some other way to find new revenue to keep shareholders happy. And voila, you have a $5 debit card fee.
So, David, are you saying that what is happening now with this change enacted by the Federal Reserve as part of the so-called Durbin Amendment, we heard from Dick Durbin at the beginning of the program, that banks are definitely going to be making a whole lot less money, but they're still going to be making money? It's not a question of whether or not they're now they're losing money, but they're still making money, if that makes sense.
Exactly. It's not a loss, even at 21 cents per transaction. There's not a single bank out there that says they will lose money. So as you say, Dave, it's a matter of making less money, and they just don't like the cut of that jib. But when you kind of crunch the numbers here, you see that they don't quite add up for customers, because when they charge a $5 monthly fee for debit cards, that comes out to about $60 a year. Now, let's look at B of A, which says it will lose $2 billion as a result of this cap on the transaction fees. They've got 57 million consumer and small business accounts. If just a majority of those customers is using debit cards, which they probably are, what we're talking about here is a windfall of $3 billion for the bank. And that's $1 billion more than the $2 billion that they say they're going to lose. So they're not just coming out. They're coming out ahead on this.
David Lazarus, business column for the Los Angeles Times. John Berlau at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, come back on that. Do you think that what the B of A is planning to do, Wells Fargo and others are considering as well, is justified?
Well, the interesting thing is, if you wanted fat cats to blame in this, there's a more appropriate bunch, just even from a liberal progressive standpoint. What about these big retailers who make billions of dollars of profits, Walmart, Home Depot, others, Walgreens? Dick Durbin actually invoked Walgreens on the floor that he said it came about because they were complaining about these fees, complaining about a 1% fee on transactions when they rake in billions of dollars in profits, and having credit and debit cards helps lower their costs from bounce checks and other things. And I have to dispute one thing that David said about 4 cents per transaction. The Fed made it clear that was at the lower range of estimates of costs, and it was variable costs. It didn't include the fixed cost of infrastructure, of building the computer network, other things. And so this is different, more restrictive, even than, say, a rate regulation on utilities, where there is explicitly a reasonable rate of return. The Durbin Amendment and the way the Fed interpreted it didn't even say rate of return. It said reasonable and proportional to cost, at cost, and you couldn't consider incremental costs. So they are putting in below-cost price controls. There was a letter to the Fed from banks and credit unions, including the community banks and the National Credit Union Administration, that said the variable costs alone are 27 cents per transaction. So they are losing at least a penny for every transaction, if you consider it's 21 to 26 cents. So the costs simply don't go away. So they'll have to be charged somewhere, just like if you limit price controls on advertising costs for radio stations or media, you're going to get the subscription fees higher. So, I mean, if you want to blame fat cats, blame the retailers, the big retailers who lobbyists, who, by the way, aren't passing on those discounts. I haven't seen any Durbin discounts to consumers, and the politicians, including a couple Republicans who supported Durbin on this thing.
John Berlau, director of the Center for Investors and Entrepreneurs at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. So Jim Wilcox at the Haas School of Business, on this question of what's reasonable and proportional, where do you come down on this when you see what the actual costs are for a bank in processing a swipe charge when a debit card is used versus the amount that they're actually getting by these proposed $5 fees? Help us understand what's reasonable, what's proportional.
Well, I think one of the things that the Fed surveys have now taught us is about how much it really does cost to run these operations. We're talking about these electronic networks. There's a lot of equipment involved and so on and so forth. And after all is said and done, it does seem that it's really costing these banks somewhere in the range of 25 cents per swipe to actually run this operation. This is not free, though a lot of consumers haven't explicitly seen how they are paying for this. But it does cost a lot to run these operations. If you take a number in the range of 25 cents, then a number like the Fed has calculated that it was, that they were, banks were charging around 44 cents, means that this should have been a pretty darn profitable operation in the past, but not anymore. And in fact, I think what's happened here, and maybe to the, for the benefit of a lot of us, actually the consumers may be better off with this entire arrangement, is that instead of having these hidden costs, not to be deceptive, but just costs that were invisible to the consumer, now the cost of actually running these operations is going to be quite visible.
So
I think what you're going to see is, if it's really the case that businesses have these costs of running these operations in excess of the ceiling that the Fed has, which is in the range of, say, 24 cents, you're going to have monthly fees or something like that. And we're going to see over the next year or two how many banks are going to follow J.P. Morgan Chase and perhaps B of A and SunTrust and a lot of others in charging these fees. If the banks don't have these costs, then they are not going to charge these fees.
So in the end, do you come down on the side of feeling like, even though 44 cents may have been beyond reasonable and proportional, that the Bank of America, Wells Fargo, others who are considering this are justified in charging some sort of fee, whether that's $5, $3, or something in between?
Yes, because in effect, all that, what they're really doing, in effect, for those of us that really prefer more transparency, is they're moving really from an invisible fee that was showing up in Walmart's prices and Walgreens' prices to a more visible fee. So I think it is the case that this will lower costs for these retailers in a very competitive industry.
Yeah.
They will be able to lower what they charge us at Walgreens and Walmart. But for those of us that are going to use this electronic payment system, we're going to have to pay the cost of operating it.
But would the other side of this, David Lazarus, be that if you're getting 22 cents every time a debit card is swiped, plus you're also charging consumers, you're getting now two sources of revenue. So you're covering your costs, plus you're getting something more. Is that the flip side of what Jim Wilcox is saying?
Well, there's a lot of things wrong with what we've been hearing here. First of all, this talk about a debit card transaction running anywhere from 25 to 27 cents when the Fed is capping it at 21 cents, I think that's a bit bogus because we're not taking in the economies of scale that come with processing billions of transactions on a monthly basis. You have to think that these network costs, these fixed costs that the banks face, get amortized over time. And after a certain point, probably not too far down the road, those costs are accounted for because of these huge numbers of transactions, and everything after that becomes pure gravy. Now, as to the retailers not passing along whatever savings they enjoy as a result of that, well, that's something that will happen down the road when we see if their profits start surging and our consumer prices don't start going down. And then consumers can start thinking about walking with their feet if they have to. It's all about transparency here, and there isn't a single bank that will tell regulators or lawmakers exactly what their charges are. They always talk in terms of aggregates and averages. Not a single one has invited in people from the Fed or other regulators to come in and actually look at their process and determine exactly how much it costs them to do this. They always kind of hide that behind the curtain. Until the banks come clean on their actual costs, all we can do is rely on the best guesses that are out there. And those best guesses say that these banks are essentially gouging merchants and, in turn, gouging consumers.
I want to pick up on what David Lazarus is asking about in terms of whether or not this is a point where consumers should bank with their feet and consider other alternatives. Jim Wilcox, does that make sense to you that this is, in a sense, an opportunity to assess what different banks are doing and figure out whether or not your own particular bank is meeting your particular banking needs?
Well, I think that is correct. And consumers perhaps ought to be doing this a little more often than they do. It is true historically that, in fact, the larger the bank, the larger the fees. And in general, banks tended to have larger fees as a group than credit unions do as a group. Part of that is explained by where it is and how expensive it is to run big banks in expensive metropolitan areas and the extent of services that are provided by larger banks. But certainly consumers should look around and see if there's a better deal elsewhere. If it really is the case that perhaps a few large banks are charging fees that are just way above what any ordinary business competition ought to lead to, then there ought to be better deals elsewhere, and consumers ought to find them. But I think partly what you're seeing already is, given the number of banks that have already announced fees, explicit monthly fees for their debit cards, and it's coming in other, it will come and has already started in other aspects of banking fees as well, that I think you have to be careful about whether, in fact, you're switching to some place that is about to start charging fees.
Jim Wilcox, professor in the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley. John Berlaug, your take on that. Would you advise consumers at this point to start shopping around, or is this a kind of, you know, buyer beware moment as well?
Well, I would certainly advise that you look around for the best deal. That's what I do. But unfortunately, because of the way the Durbin Amendment and the price controls work, there may be nowhere or few options to go, for particularly for lower income consumers who don't have that high a balance. Even the community banks and credit unions that are technically exempt have said this is going to hit us from some of the provisions, not all. This is going to hit us too. There's no guarantee that the network pricing will allow them to charge the higher rate if it's on sort of like a network grid. And also there are some other, like some backdoor price controls, like the routing, where they could a retailer could force them to use another bank's network. So even among the regional banks, such as SunTrust and Regions, have announced that they're going to have some of these fees, and the community banks say it may hit them too. And I'm just wondering, it just brings up all these fees to consumers. Was this necessary, these price controls? We don't care about, David talked about gravy, Walmart's gravy, Walmart's profit. I mean, what if we don't say Walmart's Home Depot has to be reasonable and proportional? It's sort of, a congressman brought up to 7-Eleven, how would you like it if you could only charge the incremental cost of a Slurpee? I mean, if there were competition issues, that's what we have antitrust laws. But price controls aren't the way. And I don't think Australia, when they tried this for credit cards, our Government Accountability Office of Congress looked at it. No quantifiable evidence of the savings were passed on to consumers. Plus, if you get lower efficiency, lower service from the price controls, if there's less incentive to invest in infrastructure, consumers and retailers are going to be hit.
John Berlaug at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. David Lazarus, if your math is right, shouldn't there be some well-meaning, well-intended, if that's not an oxymoron, bank who would say, you're right, David Lazarus, and we're not going to charge these particular fees? Shouldn't there be good options out there for consumers?
As a matter of fact, Citibank stepped right up and said, we are that bank. We're the good bank that's not going to charge this debit card fee. And then in their next breath, they said, oh, by the way, if you don't maintain a minimum balance, we are going to charge a monthly fee for your accounts. So they're all playing this same shell game with us. Let's remember, the banking industry moves in herds, and they're all watching very closely to see what kind of fallout B of A is going to take over this. But if and when B of A prevails in getting this fee accepted by not just lawmakers but also the customer base, then they're all going to move en masse in that direction. This is obviously a huge opportunity for the credit unions, which can offer a viable alternative to what the banks are doing. But here's the problem for consumers, is you will sacrifice convenience when you go over to a credit union. I mean, the credit unions are great. I love the service they offer. The simple fact is, though, they don't have a lot of branches, and they typically don't have a lot of ATMs, and you're going to have more limited service. And so in a sense, the big banks are trying to charge a premium for the convenience that they offer. And yet, for decades now, that convenience has been one of their key selling points. And in a sense, there's a bait and switch going on, where they had told us that using plastic, using debit cards, it's more efficient, you don't have human beings involved, and therefore you want to do this. And they transition their customer base into using these products, and then the fees come. Same thing with ATMs. They tell us it's more efficient, it's more convenient, they get us all to start using the ATMs, and then the fees come. And so you kind of get a feeling that the banks are trying to move their customers down the avenues that they know they're going to lock them into and hold them essentially captive of these services and then pound the fees on. And again, it's all about transparency. It's not really about where do they get their God-given right to revenue from. As the president said, they don't have an inherent right to profit. Instead, it's in the case of debit cards, how much does it really cost them? No one begrudges the banks a fair return for a fair service. So the question here is, how much does it really cost and what is a fair profit for that?
And what other options might be out there, Jim Wilcox? If credit unions, as David describes, have certain benefits but certain limitations because there aren't – they don't provide as many ATM machines, and when you travel, they're less available to you. What about online banks? Are there other things out there that consumers, given what our current situation is and the prospect of these fees coming, ought to consider?
Well, yes, there are things like online banks and who have typically very low costs for a good reason that I'll come to in a minute. And it's also the case that, of course, there's thousands of so-called community banks, what we might just call small banks in the United States, which on average do have lower fees than do the larger banks. But as David has said, part of what the larger banks have been offering is a lot more in the way of services. They have provided convenience. And trust me, it is not cheap to be running bank branches in the middle of Manhattan or the Loop in Chicago or downtown Los Angeles or San Francisco or even in suburban shopping plazas. These are expensive operations. And if you have an online bank, there's no sense driving around looking for your ATM because they don't have them other than through some network arrangements. So in part, what you're seeing here is, in fact, fees for services. And in fact, what we really move to is something that I think is a better arrangement than what we have had. That is, we are going to have really visible, or if we say transparent, fees for the services that we are using. We used to have invisible fees, the way the arrangements were, not for nefarious reasons. It's just things developed that way. And now they're going to be a lot more explicit. And I think it's going to show up a lot more in fees on checking accounts, and maybe even much more broadly than that.
And we're coming up on a break, but David Lasser, just a quick rejoinder on that. Is there an argument made for sort of truth in lending in this case, I guess, that there is at least clarity about what you're being charged as opposed to it being sort of hidden within each transaction that you make when you make a retail purchase?
Well, I appreciate the sentiment, but the problem here is you're being charged for one thing when in reality the service you're receiving is something else. So having a $5 debit card fee, whether you make a single transaction or 100 transactions, it might be clear to the consumer, but you don't exactly know, you know, what it's covering. Whereas if we knew precisely what the banks are, what it costs them to do this, and they charged a commensurate fee for it, as the Fed wants them to do, then it'd all be very clear. So the transparency doesn't have to shift to something else. It can be exactly where we want it to be, which is how much do these transactions cost?
David Lasser is business columnist for the Los Angeles Times. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take your calls on this question. Are you upset about the proposed fees? What are you considering doing as an alternative? And we'll also explore the other sorts of frustrations that people are feeling with banks these days, concern about the role the banks have played in foreclosures, which is prompting some people in the South Bay to move their bank accounts to different banks. We'll talk about that when we return. Here's the number if you want to join us. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also post your question or concern on our Facebook page, or you can email us your questions at forum@kqed.org, forum@kqed.org. We'll be back in just a moment to take your concerns here on Forum at KQED. We want to thank John Berlau for joining us on this first part of our program. We'll hear more from Jim Wilcox and David Lazarus when we return. Again, the number 866-733-6786. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the unhappiness that many consumers are feeling about the banking industry these days. We've focused in the first part of our program about the new fees that some banks are going to charge for use of debit cards anytime you use them to make a purchase. In a bit, we're also going to get into another aspect of this, the concern that many people have about the role banks have played in foreclosures and that that is driving some people to make changes in their banking arrangements as well. We want to hear from you right now. What do you think of the fact that Bank of America and others are now going to charge for use of debit cards? Are you considering making a change? If so, what will that change involve? You can join us at 866-733-6786. And let's go to Brian, who joins us first on the satellite network from Canton, Ohio. Brian, go ahead.
Hey, I'm one of the unhappy Bank of America customers. I've been with them for quite some time, and I am going to leave as a result of this. I've decided I'm going to go to a federal credit union or a local bank. I was, in fact, going to do it the other day. However, the bank happened to be closed on Columbus Day. As far as convenience, that's not an issue with me. I'd rather not pay the fee. I think that, most of us have payroll deduction. Our payroll, goes straight to our accounts. And you can use Walmart as an ATM. Anytime you go in Walmart and make a purchase, you can get my cash back. So the convenience with respect to ATMs is not an issue.
Okay.
There's Walmarts all over the United States.
All right, Brian, thanks. Thanks for getting us started on how you're going to contend with this. David Lazarus, I'm curious about what you think consumers ought to think about. From Brian's standpoint, if he's not someone who travels a lot, the convenience issue may not be. He can get cash in other ways when he buys groceries or goes to Walmart. Give us a kind of checklist of the things you ought to think about if you're going to move to a credit union rather than stay with your bank.
Well, if you're relatively sedentary and stable like Brian is, then you're probably not going to be giving up a lot. I mean, if you're based locally and all your services are going to be local, then great. A small bank or a credit union is almost certainly going to be a great choice for you. A lot of people in modern life have more, diverse financial needs, and they're running everything from their debit card to their credit card to their mortgage to their home equity line to, maybe even a small business loan through a single bank, and you do get discounts for keeping all of your financial needs under a single roof. So there's a real incentive, as with, say, your cable bill, bundling all sorts of services there as well, to do all of your banking and your finances with a single entity. The banks know that. They want you to be very monogamous. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's great that they can offer discounts for loyal services. It's when they turn around and, in effect, punish you for no fault of your own, that's when a line gets crossed. And it's tricky because I heard a lot in the last week from disgruntled Netflix customers who said, that does it, this price increase and then that whole splitting off into Quixtor, which they backed away from. I'm done with this company. I'm going to vote with my feet. When it comes to banks, it's a little different. I heard from a lot of people like Brian who said, that does it. I'm out of here for Bank of America. But I heard from a lot of others who said, I wish I could leave, but I can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And interestingly, when it comes to a bank, we have a more passive relationship with banks. We tend to feel that we have to take what we get, which is, I think, incorrect in many ways because you can go elsewhere. But to a certain extent, the banks are exploiting the fact that once they lock you into all these services, it's hard for you to just pull up stakes.
And to John, next in Alameda. John, go ahead.
Yeah. About 20 years ago, shortly after we got married, we made the change from commercial banks to credit unions exclusively, and we've never gone back. And we've been very happy. We got the lowest mortgage rate from our credit union at the time when we bought a new house. And they offered us a lower rate to refinance shortly thereafter, which we would not have received from any other commercial vendors. And we did look around for through loan brokers and other people. Credit unions aren't perfect, as my wife has reminded me. They're not immune to human errors, but it's much nicer to walk into a local branch where people don't want you to go away, where they're happy to help you at the counter, where they will give you the quarters for doing the laundry or whatever it is you need to take care of things.
Okay, John.
And
yeah, no,
a reason to look at not getting a mortgage and not leaving a bank because you might not get a mortgage. If you've already got a mortgage with a bank, go ahead and keep it. On the other hand, don't expect to get a lower rate from a commercial bank than from a credit union.
John, thanks. Thanks for the observation. Jim Wilcox, John raises something that I wanted to bring into this. One option for consumers here is to, in a sense, think about all the services their bank provides. One of the, I think it's Bank of America, will not charge that $5 fee if you have a certain level of mortgage with them. Is another option here to sort of, you know, play by the rules, in a sense, and think about the fact that if you kind of bundle everything together within a bank, that you can actually make out okay?
Well, it is sometimes the case that if you bring more of your financial transactions to a single institution, they might give you a better deal than if you have them scattered all over the place. But nonetheless, I think John also raises an important point here. If you'll permit me an economic theorem for a minute, different strokes for different folks. That is, different people have very different values that they place on whether it's convenience or just how welcoming a financial transaction might be, as John has suggested. But other people need perhaps more sophisticated transactions as of the sort that David was mentioning. So I think it's always going to be the case that some people are just going to find a better deal for themselves at the smaller institutions, the more locally oriented institutions. Others are going to want the larger full-service operations, I think. But that's true of basically everything in retailing. I mean, it's true from grocery stores to almost anything that we do in our consumer lives.
Lots of emails coming in that also speak to the sort of unhappiness, I guess, that people feel about banks in general. Susan writes in, it may only be a $5 fee, but remember, consumers are getting almost no interest. I'll stick with my credit union, thank you, that charges no fees. Someone else writes in, I've been a credit union member for years and will never become a bank customer. They lost me a long time ago. I hate to be gouged. As I see it, from the beginning of the housing crisis, the banks have had an option of making the exploding ATMs, or rather the exploding ARM, that kind of mortgage loan. They have established a floor, and I would have proposed helping that with that situation, but they did not take me up on that. Another person writes in, the banks still don't get it and continue to act with extreme hubris. So a lot of unhappiness about banks, and I want to turn to that subject for a moment and bring into a conversation Gina Gates, who is with something called PACT, People Acting in Community Together, which is a coalition of churches, synagogues, and mosques that work on social issues in the South Bay. And a number of churches in that area are moving their bank accounts away from Bank of America in one case, away from Wells Fargo in another. Gina Gates, tell us about why you're moving your bank services and what it is about the banking industry right now that's prompting that action.
The banks have failed to help homeowners modify their loans. They just refuse to do loan modifications that are meaningful and sustainable. We have gone and met with the bank. We met with Bank of America specifically and repeatedly in negotiations. We've talked to them. We've gone to their investors meetings, and still nothing. So they have had the opportunity to do something, to act fairly and stop behaving and conducting business in this shroud of secrecy. So at this point, we are walking with our money. We realize they're just not getting it, so we are affecting their bottom line.
One of the churches that's involved in your organization, Most Holy Trinity Church in San Jose, is moving its $3 million account from Bank of America to a credit union. Your overall umbrella organization is pulling their $1 million account from Wells Fargo. Where are you taking your money, and how will you ensure that your money in a different situation is actually going to promote a different sort of value?
Well, going to a credit union, we are actually going to be able to have a voice. We get to vote. We get to participate in how that business is run, not like Bank of America. We've gone, again, like I said, we have gone to their shareholders meeting, even though we've gone even being shareholders ourselves, some of us, it falls on deaf ears. So we are going to be able to vote, and within that credit union itself. The other thing is the banks have been selected have no business and no interest in mortgage loans. They don't do mortgages. So
You don't worry about it there.
Gina Gates with the People Acting in Community Together organization in San Jose. Thanks for adding your perspective. David Lazarus, put this in some perspective for us in terms of the kinds of comments and what you hear from other people. There was a feature story about this on the news last night here in the Bay Area, and you saw someone in a clerical collar saying, all we're getting is the runaround from Bank of America. It's probably not exactly good PR when you have someone in a clerical collar saying, you know, we're getting the runaround from your particular organization. Are you hearing that a lot from people, and what do you make of that sort of movement?
Yeah, I hear you. Nobody wants to get smacked around by God. But yet not a day goes by where I don't get emails from distressed homeowners saying, I really want to stay in my house. I can't get any response from the bank. I'm trying to get a loan modification. I'm trying to get a refi. I'm trying to, you know, and basically the banks have these one-size-fits-all policies that don't really take into the account the individual needs of various homeowners. And it's very distressing. You feel the pain of so many people out there who want to do right, who want to do the good thing, but they're just not able to find a partner who can work with them. There's an interesting element to all of this that we haven't really talked about, and that is how the banking model has shifted over time. And traditionally, you can kind of think of It's a Wonderful Life and the Bailey Building and Loan. And the idea there is you give them your money, and in return for them being able to hold your money and use your money while you're not using it, they're going to give you a return on it, an interest on it. And that's banking at its most basic. Well, right now, the banks are sitting on a ton of cash, trillions of dollars in cash. They don't need your money anymore. Moreover, those meat and potato services aren't really the big ticket for them anymore. And so, in a sense, they're able to act with impunity and turn around and say to customers, well, take it or leave it. This $5 fee, we don't want your money necessarily. We don't mind if you leave. And in just, you know, years gone by, there's no way a bank would have turned away a customer with pockets full of cash. Instead, they would have figured out some way to develop a relationship. And now they're basically saying, there's the door. Have a good day.
Jim Wilcox, what's your perspective on that, whether or not banks can, in fact, act with impunity, as David Lazarus is suggesting, in this sort of continuum of anger that you hear these days, whether it's the organizations in the South Bay that are moving their money because of how banks have performed during the foreclosure crisis, whether it's the Occupy Wall Street movement, or this sort of visceral anger that people feel about these $5 fees for use of their debit cards. What do you make of how the banks will respond to that, or will they just say, meh, so what? Doesn't bother us.
Well, first of all, for any customer, whether it's somebody with a savings account, a credit card, debit card, or a mortgage, anybody who's unhappy with the service they're getting with their retailer is likely to go to some other business, and that's just the way of the world. And for people that think they can get a better deal elsewhere, then they should. And whether if that's at credit unions or at community banks or maybe even some other large bank, then that's exactly what they ought to do. Banks that really aren't performing up to snuff are going to be pummeled in the marketplace, and that will force them to do better or get out. With regard to the issue of whether banks are very interested in having people coming in and make deposits, David points out correctly, banks at this point are sitting on a lot of cash. And it is true, in the aggregate, they're sitting on more than $1 trillion of cash.
Wow.
But what you have to remember is this is basically idle cash. If I go and deposit an extra $1,000 in my bank and it sits there, the bank is earning virtually zero on that. Nonetheless, it costs them money to run my checking account. It probably costs, for every checking account these banks have, it may cost them a couple of $100 a year just to maintain the account. So in that sense, they're basically they can't make it up on volume. And so at this particular juncture, and we know we're in a very odd spot in the economy right now, interest rates, by and large, are at zero. And this causes banks enormous problems. They just can't earn much interest income at this point, and therefore they just can't pay interest on these accounts. In many cases, they'd rather not have them.
Yeah. David Lazarus, pity the poor banks?
Well, no, the problem here, I mean, Jim is noting, as I did, that the banks are sitting on a ton of money. And indeed, when the money is idle, then it's not really being a profit center for them. Well, the answer to that is obvious. Put it to work. Give loans to small businesses. Give loans to homeowners. Put the money out there into the community so that it can generate economic activity, in return, bring the economy up, and in return, in theory, generate more business for the bank as the economy starts firing on all pistons again. The idea that they're letting this money sit fallow all this time is just ludicrous. The banks have become so risk-averse as a result of getting their you-know-what's bitten during the downturn that they're just putting all their money under a mattress and hoping for a sunny day down the road. That's not how it works. Until credit flows freely again, until small businesses are able to get the money they need to get their businesses going, we're not going to get out of this mess. The banks need to take the long view as opposed to the short view.
And back to our callers. Bob is next in Sausalito. Bob, go ahead.
Hi. You know, I think the reason that most of us feel like we need a bank is so we can get paid and pay bills. I mean, that's what we've all been doing forever. And that's really not true. We're seeing a real huge trend on people moving to prepaid cards. And we supply a prepaid MasterCard that does everything you really need with a traditional bank. And in many cases, it's much, much cheaper to do business through a prepaid card.
Okay, Bob, thanks. Jim Wilcox, comment on that. Explain what a prepaid card actually is and whether or not that's a realistic alternative for many people.
Well, as its name suggests, it's kind of like having a credit card, but you sent in the check before you went to Macy's. And so, in fact, there are such cards, and they do have a decent market share. People are using them more and more. I mean, we're seeing, as we've seen for a few decades now, all kinds of innovations in financial services where, you know, as the years are rolling along, people will be able to make payments perhaps with their phones and all kinds of electronic means. A lot of these things will still end up passing through banks one way or another. But I think, for example, with some of these cards, sometimes what people have discovered is oftentimes there are sort of hidden fees and costs and disadvantages in some of these cards, whether either because they expire or it turns out that there's some kind of you have to pay $25 to get the $24 card and so on and so forth. So I don't think there's going to be a zero-cost alternative. These services of all kinds are tremendously convenient, all the way from paper checks to electronic banking, but they cost something to run, and we have to expect to pay some fee for some service.
Here's a web comment I'd like your comment on, David Lazarus, that came into our website. This person writes in, I can choose which retailer I shop at for each purchase. If a retailer passes the debit card swipe fee on to me and I don't want to pay it, I shop elsewhere. That sounds like a good plan to be that sort of assertive consumer, but how do you know? I mean, how do you know whether or not that retailer is passing on that swipe fee to you?
And you know that by simply doing your due diligence as a consumer, which means looking at the coupons that are out there, looking at the shopping circulars that get put out there with the newspaper, and yes, you should subscribe to your local newspaper, and you know, just basically shopping around, not going to a single retailer, but instead looking at what the other retailers are offering. This is an extremely competitive time out there in the real world, retail world, especially now as the holiday season is going to be kicking into high gear. And these guys are fighting for your business. And it's all about the price with American consumers. So clearly, there are going to be retailers who are doing everything they can to get an edge. And if that means they can lower prices because their transaction fees for debit cards have come down, they will. Especially the larger ones who can absorb this hit. You know, there's a real interesting irony here, too. We were talking about the prepaid cards. Now the State Employment Development Department is giving out unemployment checks, not on paper anymore, but through debit cards. Debit cards from who? Bank of America. Hmm. Now, when I called EDD, they said that these EDD debit cards will be immune to the $5 fee, but there's a certain thing, you know, B of A is laying off, what, 30,000 people and thus raising the ranks of the unemployment. And now when people get their unemployment checks, it'll be on their B of A debit card.
And let's hear next from Celeste in Los Gatos. Celeste, go ahead, please.
Hi there. I'd like to clarify what one of your guests mentioned earlier in regards to the number of branches and ATMs available to credit union members. I happen to be employed by a credit union. I've been in credit unions 25 years, and I think that that's a misnomer that credit union members don't have like access with ATMs, debit cards, and branches that customers have of banks. So, for example, most credit unions belong to a shared branching network, and this allows members of a participating credit union to visit over 6,000 branches within the U.S. to do their banking if they choose to go to a branch. As far as ATMs go, most credit unions belong to more than one network. And, for example, one of the networks is called Allpoint. That particular network has 43,000 surcharge-free ATMs worldwide that credit union members of that participating network can visit.
Okay, Celeste, thank you. It's useful to get that clarifying information about what access you do have as a credit union member. We're getting lots of emails that come in similar to this one. I'm sick of the fat cats, for-profit banks charging fees and decimating our country, credit unions, people, exclamation point. David, is that what you're hearing as well?
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the big things here is we talk about these multi-trillion dollar national debt. We talk about these sky-high deficits, and these numbers are just – there's just too many zeros for the average person to really take in. On the other hand, when the bank says $5 a month for your debit card, boom, I get that. And that's something that stirs outrage among ordinary folk because that hits you right where you live. And I think that's why we're seeing more outrage over this than we've seen over other profligate things that we've seen out there. Republicans and Democrats just spending like a sailor on shore leave, for example. That's just – it's too far removed from our ordinary sphere of influence. And so these bank fees really are it. And I think this B of A $5 fee somehow crossed some invisible rubric that was out there because there's so many fees we get dinged with virtually everywhere you look, but this one somehow really resonated with people.
And to Melissa, next in Philadelphia this morning. Melissa, go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to ask your guests if they know anything about Bank Simple, which I understand is a bank that's about to be launched and claims it has a different way of doing business. One of the founders is Alex Payne, who was a founder of Twitter. I don't know, though, what their business plan, their business model is, and I wondered if your panelists know anything about that and if they are going to be a real alternative to conventional banks.
All right, Melissa, thank you. Jim Wilcox, do you know about Bank Simple? If so, what is it?
I'm afraid I'm not familiar with them yet.
David?
Yeah, I believe I've read about them. They're going to be an online bank, and there's nothing wrong with online banks. Goodness
David, explain
knows, many
briefly
of us...
what they are, if you would, what how an online bank actually operates.
Well, an online bank is basically a cyber bank. They are going to offer services that a bank can do, but they're not going to have a physical presence out there in the real world. So, for example, many of us use online bill pay, for example. That's online, and that's great, and it's very convenient. And if that's the extent or the bulk of your banking needs is transacting digital money in a digital sphere, then terrific. I think a lot of people, however, do rely on the ATMs, which obviously any cyber bank is going to network into, as we heard about the credit unions before. But beyond that, I think when it comes to banks, people like the human touch. No matter how much the banks try and steer us into technology, whether it's ATMs or online banking, when it comes to your money, there's just something about handing your cash to a human being that feels more trustworthy. When it comes to your mortgage, there's just something about sitting across the desk from somebody that feels more, well, you know, sacrosanct as opposed to talking to somebody who's in Bombay or Manila or something like that. So it's hard to imagine the retail banking industry ever going out of business, per se, but these online banks, there's clearly a niche for it.
Melissa, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Lisa in San Francisco. Lisa, go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to just first say that I think it's a little disappointing that your panel is so uninformed about credit unions that they make it sound like moving your money is impossibly difficult or inconvenient. I can tell you that I've had a Wells Fargo account for 20 years, and I opened a
local credit union account. And I'm thinking today I'm going to close the Wells Fargo account because I'm tired of being nickeled and dimed. I am tired of this premise, which I reject, and your panel is discussing as well, that the recent passing of this legislation is so egregious for the banks that they're going to have to start to, well, they're going to have to find a way to capture all of this money for these they call them services or products. I don't understand that. In this economy, everyone is having to tighten their belts. Why do the banks get a pass on capturing these fees that they charge for everything? And credit unions offer low APR rates on credit cards, refunds of ATM fees.
Yeah, Lisa, thanks for your comment. I'm sorry to jump in on you, but we just have a minute left, and I'd like to get our panelists to respond to your concern. Hearing, again, a lot of that, Jim Wilcoxon, just take from Lisa's point, if you would, for a last comment about the sort of visceral feeling that people have and whether or not they really have the clout to do something that will change bank behavior.
Well, remember what we said at the outset was that it seems very unlikely that the banks are going to end up anywhere near making up the kinds of fees that they no longer can collect on these interchange fees with the debit card swipes. These fees are not going to make up for that. They just can't. Business and competition just is not going to permit it. Their profits are going to be lower. There's no doubt, and that's why I feel in many ways consumers are going to be better off. I think in some ways consumers are a little bit trying to have it both ways by saying what they really like is transparency and paying for fees for services and not paying for what they don't get, and then complaining when fees are made so blatant. And I think in some ways we have to just accept that if you really want to have things be visible, then maybe we shouldn't be quite so upset when they are visible.
And David Lazarus, afraid I'm just going to have to give you 15 seconds, but a last quick thought on what the angry consumer and people like Lisa should now do.
Do make your voice heard. There's no upside to being silent when this kind of thing happens. Let your bank know. Let the local media know. Let activists know. Don't take this on the chin.
David Lazarus, business columnist for the Los Angeles Times, joining us this hour along with Jim Wilcox, professor in the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley. Thanks both very much. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Danny Bringer is our engineer. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.